Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Welcome, listeners. You've got Mark here. This is the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today, my friend John Barrows is coming on the show to tell you all about the children's book that he wrote called I Want to Be in Sales When I Grow Up, which is a brilliant book, by the way. I highly recommend that you go and pick this up to read to your kids. I bought it and I read it to my two boys and they loved it. It follows the story of a little girl named Charlie as she plans to sell cookies around the neighborhood. And what she very quickly realizes is that sales isn't easy. But with practice, Charlie gets well on her way to making a difference. And really, that's what sales is all about, providing solutions and making a difference in people's lives. And I absolutely loved this book. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And I highly recommend that you go out. If you've got kids or nieces or nephews, or you have friends that have kids, go and buy this book and gift it to those children or to those parents, or read it to your own kids, please. It is just wonderful. All of the proceeds go to charity as well, which I think is amazing and just incredible. So go and buy this book and enjoy this interview with Mr. John Barrows. John Barrows, we made it, buddy. How are you?
We're still here. So
we're still here. Let's be clear. We're still here.
Every day is an adventure, my friend, and you got to do what you can to stay positive.
So well, man, you know what? I'm just stoked with the way that you're keeping things positive, which is to write a children's book about what you're passionate about and to teach kids that sales is a legitimate profession and that kids should be interested in it. Now, as shocking as it might sound to you, there are some people who don't know who you are. So,
of course they don't.
For those people, tell them who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so appreciate it. You know, John, I run JB Sales, a little company here doing sales training. We got about seven people on staff.
Much bigger than he makes it out. He's too humble. Too humble.
We're trying our best to kind of elevate the profession. So I kind of grew up, I have a marketing background, got into sales, selling power tools with DeWalt, then Xerox copiers, really where I got my true sales education, if you will. Then started a company doing IT services, didn't know what I was doing at 23 years old, took every training there was, came across one that I liked, sold my company to Staples, got fired because I'm just not a corporate person. And sometimes somebody else has to tell you that for you to realize it. And then got into training because I truly believed in this content that it was the right approach, at least from a sales standpoint, doing it ethically and with purpose. And then went off on my own about 7 or 8 years ago now with JB Sales and work with some cool companies, you know, Salesforce, LinkedIn, Slack, Google, a lot of the fast growing SaaS tech startups in San Francisco is where we do most of our work. So super excited, you know, and I still sell. I'm not a trainer that just trains. I still actively sell every day. So I prospect into tier one accounts. I manage deals. I also cross sell up still. So I'm doing all that stuff while getting out there trying to spread the word here about some tips and ideas on how to elevate the profession a little bit here.
I think that's an important distinction. You're a sales guy who happens to be a trainer, not a trainer who happens to do some selling.
Yeah, I think
I think a lot of people, it's a small distinction, but it's very important.
I believe so. You know, sales is route with people, you know, you always say if you can't do, teach, right? So, you know, and nothing against those people. I know there's a lot of really good teachers, right, who necessarily weren't the best at whatever the profession was. But the problem is the further you get away from the direct selling, the less effective I think you are in this world because things are changing so fast right now in sales. Yeah. I mean, especially with where we are right now. I mean, daily, literally, you know, what the messaging that worked last week or whatever is not working anymore. So if you're not really on the front lines going out there and seeing what's happening, it's hard to translate that to people that are on the front lines. It's just like being a manager, right? Like if you're managing a bunch of SDRs making cold calls and you haven't made a cold call in the past 6 months, then it's going to be hard for me to listen to you tell me what to do on a cold call when you have never done a cold call in this environment. Like you might have done a cold call 2 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it is, and been successful. But in this environment, like, come on, you better be on those front lines making calls with me to have any credibility at all to tell me what to do.
And I think that's where a lot of people are now starting to leverage really cool tools like Gong and others to determine what's working, what's not working, to stay ahead of that, because it is changing so quickly. And without tools like that, you're going to be hitting roadblock after roadblock, and you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in the benefit now of those tools and the insights and stuff to see what does work. And it's no longer opinion-based, right? It's no longer, it used to be guys like me could get away with saying something that sounded really good, but it was usually because we said it so often and we practiced it, right, in a role play scenario. But now our opinions don't matter. There's data out there that shows, okay, you know, Gong or whoever it is, they analyze millions of phone calls and emails and they compare what the best reps do versus what average reps do. And they give us at least a baseline. So for me, I believe now more than ever, the best sales, the best professionals in the world, forget about sales for a second, are scientists, are ones who are agile, who can constantly test and try different things. And when a new idea or a new topic comes out that is data driven, they use that as a baseline to compare whatever they're doing against and see which one works better. So that's kind of where I feel like we need to be right now. And that goes to negotiations on both sides of the equation, like constantly looking at where we can find that common ground, but also the adjustments we need to make along the way. It's very interesting to me right now to pay attention to those type of things.
And there's so many advancements that are being made in the negotiation world right now, in the sales world right now, for AI and the implementation of AI. It's blowing me away on a daily basis. I was chatting with a guy the other day named, I can't remember his last name, forgive me, Martin. But his first name is Martin. He is a co-founder of a company called Pactum, and it's an AI negotiation chatbot that negotiates at scale on Tailspin. So let's just say, for example, you sold PPE, so gloves, masks, all that other kind of stuff, right? For most large enterprise companies, that's considered Tailspin, right? Like lots of vendors, not a lot of spend. We usually don't pay attention to it. It's something that we just put aside and hopefully consolidate to someone. But now what this tech can do is that it negotiates multiple different contracts all at the same time. So at parallel, at scale. So previously you would have to have a procurement person managing each contract, right? Or, you know, maybe a handful. Maybe let's get aggressive and say they were doing 12 to 15 of these contracts at a time. But now what this technology can do is it negotiates all of the contracts at once, all at the same time, and it can optimize all of them at parallel. So it can make concessions over here to get a better deal over here.
Jesus.
It's constantly moving the deals to make sure that it gets the most optimum outcome. So all of those procurement people that were negotiating those contracts, their days are numbered, essentially, because now this technology is just going to do it for them. And by the way, it's better because it has no bias and it has all the data and it knows how to negotiate. So it can use your own bias against you.
See, that's scary.
Isn't that scary? That's wild, man.
I mean, I keep telling reps, like, you know, the one thing that we got to start keep asking ourselves is what can we do that a computer can't, right? And that question is getting harder and harder and harder to answer. You know, it's the same thing on the sales side is, you know, those SDRs that are cranking out those template emails with, you know, Sales Loft and whatever, and they're not putting any thought into it. And they're literally just clicking send. I'm like, same thing. Your days are numbered because there's technology out there that can do that. I mean, shoot, I don't even talk about AI for a second. I mean, just the marketing automation tools
just
can
the automation.
Better than the sales reps, for crying out loud. So there is a reckoning coming. I was a little bit more freaked out probably 3 or 4 years ago than I am now, because I do still believe there is, I have this whole, you know, mentality or concept around the last mile, right? Let all the technology do all the heavy lifting, right? Gather all the insights, come up with all the whatever you want. But right before it hits a human, have a human look at that data and contextualize it, right? Make it, humanize it, right? But you don't have to do all that heavy lifting anymore because you have technology that can tell you all these different nuances, but you still have to put your last mile flavor on top of it, right? For it to hit.
And I think what people are now wondering is, are the skills that are required for that last mile different than the skills that are required to do all the heavy lifting up front? And so what are the skills that are required so that I can ensure that I still am successful in sales for the long run?
I don't know exactly. I mean, obviously, it depends on what the role is or what the tool is. But as an example, from SDR standpoint, I don't think it's up to SDRs these days to reinvent the wheel with new messaging all over the place, right? I think it's up to them to take the AI bots or whatever it is that craft the messaging that looks like 95% legit, and then almost copyright copywriters where they can look at it and say, that's not, a human wouldn't say that, right?
Right.
Or instead of saying, hello, Mark Raffin, which is what a computer might do, I'm going to put a little flavor and say, hi, Mark, you know, that type of thing. And also like this, like video. I mean, where technology still isn't caught up or at least isn't taking over is empathy, is context, is having this conversation and showing that you give a shit, right? Because you said before that technology, there's no bias there. Well, there is bias with humans, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
That's
you know what I mean? To look at you, Mark, and say, you're a person and you're in a tough spot right now because your company is getting crushed by COVID or whatever it is. And looking at the data and saying, well, I should screw Mark and get him down 25% on what I used to pay him because I can, right? That's technology. Now, humans, though, like I can look at it and say, that's not the right thing to do. Have you ever seen the movie iRobot?
Yes.
Okay. So one of my favorite, like that, to me, that is where we're going. I am fully convinced that's where we're going. But I also understand the challenge that Will Smith faced, right? Because he was like, the reason that he hated robots so much was because when he crashed into this other car and there was a little girl in that other car and they were sinking, right?
Yes. Right.
The robot came down and did a calculation in its head that said, this guy is more like it, the likelihood of survival is higher with him than her. So I'm going to save him. Whereas any normal human being would look at a little girl and a grown ass man and say, I'm going to save the little girl because she has more life to live. It's the same thing with the, I think the biggest fear with AI bots on driving. It's like, okay, yes, a vehicle driving is going to make a better decision objectively about swerving around and missing this traffic and potentially hitting this person. But if swerving around this traffic to a 95-year-old who barely should be in the car and whatever versus hitting a kid on the street, data says that it's probably a better idea to hit the kid on the street because the less likelihood, but you know what I mean? Like, there's just
exactly
some piece of empathy there that needs to be there before. And until computers start buying from computers, we still have a chance. I mean, my biggest fear is forget about the seller side of like all the technology. My fear is what you just brought up is the buyer side, is when the buyers start using technology to buy. So therefore, AI goes into their systems, understands all the complexities, knows exactly what they need to consolidate or whatever tool is. It then sends an RFP out to 10 companies that fit that profile because they're all on Gartner's Magic Quadrant. And then all of a sudden it runs all those data and it makes a decision purely based on that. Like that's
by the way,
my
that
fear.
Already exists.
Yeah. That's my big
that's
fear.
That's scary. And for me, that's insane. And so I think what I love, what you brought up is that empathy, that EQ thing that I think is hard to teach. Because it requires the emotion behind it and it requires understanding the counterparty. And thankfully, not there yet with computers. Thank God. Whether we get there is another story. I don't know. I'm not smart enough and I'm not involved in that enough to know whether we're going to get there, but we're not there yet. And that's what I love about what you wrote about in your book is the understanding that's required to be in sales. And I think that's came across beautifully in the way that you wrote that. So let's talk about the book. For those listeners that haven't picked it up yet, do yourself a favor, pick up this incredible book. It's called I Want to Be in Sales When I Grow Up. And it's all about this little girl named Charlie. So let's walk through the idea of the book. Why come about it? And what did you want to achieve with it?
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, now with where I am in my profession and kind of in this profession, a lot of people have been asking me all the time, hey, when are you going to write a book? When are you going to write a book? And I've always struggled with it because A, I don't like reading all that much. Like that's not how I learn. Okay. I mean, I'm dead serious. Like I pick up a book within four pages, I fall asleep. But I've really tried to, no, I'm going to sit down in an uncomfortable chair, but I legitimately fall asleep. I learn by this type of scenario, right? I learn by doing. And so I just learn differently. And I also thought like, what am I going to write that hasn't already been written 1,000 times? I mean, I know I have my voice and all that other stuff, whatever, but I just thought I would be writing a book just to write a book. And I don't like to do things just to do them. And so as I rewind a little bit, my daughter, when she was about 6 years old, she got into Girl Scout cookies, right? Selling Girl Scout cookies. And she came to me one time and she said, Daddy, I know you have a big social media following, which no 6 year old should really know. But she said, you know, I have this link here where people can buy Girl Scout cookies. So instead of me going door to door, they can buy it online, right? And she's like, could you share it out there? And I'm like, no, you know, I'm like, absolutely not. She's like, why not? I go, well, first of all, that's my audience and I earn that audience. And so like, I'm not just going to post it out there. Right. And also like, why would they buy from you? Why would they buy from you compared to any other relative that's trying to sell them Girl Scout cookies? Right. And she's like, okay, well, what do I need to do? I was like, well, let's put together a little video. Let's put together a pitch of why you should buy Girl Scout cookies from you. Right. So we did this little practicer pitch and I recorded it and I wrote a little blog post on it. Next year, she was going at it again and she was doing door to door. So we practiced objection handling and I videotaped that and I wrote another blog post on it. And I felt like this was a cool journey because as I was teaching her how to sell, I was looking at it from a different perspective, right? I was looking at it as the true essence of sales, a little girl selling cookies, you know, that type of thing. And I'm like, all right, so this will be fun. And I used to travel quite a bit, obviously, before COVID. And one of the things that killed me was I was always gone. So every week I was traveling and I was always looking for ways to connect more with my daughter, you know, help her understand what I did. And, you know, when you tell your five-year-old kid, they understand what a lawyer is, a doctor, police officer, they understand most other professions because they see them on TV and they get it, right? When you tell your kid you're in sales, they kind of look at you sideways and they're like, what's that? You talk to people all day long? So I wanted a book that I could read my daughter that could help her feel proud of what daddy did, right? And so we went on this journey together where we wrote this book. And the goal of the book was really to introduce sales to, because no kid ever says, I want to be in sales when I grow up. No kid. It's always the default profession, which is why we have such a bad name. Because what happens is you go get your degree in whatever you want to get, right? You think, I still think it's absurd that people are asked to dedicate, you know, what do they want to do for the rest of their life at 18 years old? Okay. But whatever. And then you get out and you realize, either A, I don't want to do this, or B, I can't make enough money, right? So low barrier to entry, sales. I'm pretty good with people. But the problem is that you give a seemingly good person who comes out of school, who usually doesn't lie, who doesn't cheat or any of that stuff, you then put them in a situation where they get very little training. You give them a territory, you give them a quota, and you say, good luck. And by the way, if you don't hit your quota, won't be able to pay your rent because your base salary is not enough. And you'll probably get fired in the next 2 to 3 months, right? You put a good person in that scenario, they will do unnatural things. They will work that gray line a little bit there. They will say things that might not be necessarily true. They will stuff things, you know what I mean? They will do all these things that automatically put us in a negative perception because it's like, oh, these sleazy sales reps, but it's not necessarily all of our fault. That scenario does not support a successful engagement, if you will. So if we were to teach kids early that sales is a profession that A, they could study and be proud of and learn it from the beginning, when they got out into the real world, they might not even have to go to college. And look, I got my own opinions here of four-year colleges. I personally think four-year colleges are a joke. I think they're a nice social education. I think they're a ridiculous actual education. I believe an education happens when you come back and you decide to go get your MBA. Like once you're out in the real world and you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to do all this stuff, whatever. And you say, no, 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 I want to go learn about this. And you go get your MBA. You've chosen to learn about that. So therefore, that's when learning truly happens. Unless you get into college and you're like, you know, you want to be a doctor, you know, you want to be a lawyer, whatever. But very few of us have that direction. So I think a four-year college is somewhat of a joke. So why not give a kid the opportunity when they come out of high school to say, either, wait a minute, either I go and drop $200,000 a year to get a $50,000 a year job that I'm going to have to pay back for the rest of my life and live in my parents' basement, or I could go out there and I could start a business. I could get into sales and generate enough revenue to then choose to go back to school and pay my own way. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. Personally, I think the other is better, but I just like the option of it. And so that's really where this came from. A, the goal is to introduce sales to kids at a very young age. So they, again, see it as something that they could do. Two, it's to get more women into sales because, you know, I believe women are some of the best sales professionals in the world. And my daughter, having her is kind of the face of the book. And then three, you know, 100% of the profits go to charity. So, you know, it's funny, my daughter does not want to be in sales when she grows up. She actually wants to be a veterinarian. So 100% of the profits go to World Wildlife Fund. And we're about to write another check this year for $15,000 to the World Wildlife Fund to help them save the animals and stuff like that. So it really just kind of, it was a great way of me introducing my daughter to really what I did, but also for a bigger purpose. And there's some key takeaways in the back of the book that are really just the essence of what I believe that the profession is really all about.
Yeah. And I think for me, the journey that Charlie goes on through that to learn what it takes to not just, because I think this is where most people fall flat on the whole idea of what sales is. They think you're selling something instead of providing a solution to help meet a need. And I think that that's where a lot of the mischaracterization of salespeople comes from, is they view it as like, you're just trying to pawn something off on someone else. Exactly. Right? You're just trying to get rid of your shitty product. And that's not a thing. Like the vast majority of salespeople out there, in my opinion at least, are looking to actually help people and provide solutions to help meet needs. And yet, for whatever reason, we probably got the media to blame for this to a large extent, there's this idea of what salespeople are. So the effort that you guys put into this book to try and change that perception, I think needs to be applauded, because it's a big deal. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to shape the perception of what a salesperson is, and you're going against a big battle. And you look at movies like Wolf of Wall Street and other movies like that, you're just like, good God. Right. If this is the continuous image that we keep pushing out into the world about what salespeople are, they're never going to win this battle, man. No. So getting into kids' lives early enough to be able to teach them what sales is and what sales isn't, I think is really important, because that's when they can start looking at movies like that going, okay, but I know better. Right. I know better now because my dad showed me. And this was when you put this book out, I ended up buying it and I read it to my boys the night that it came in. And it had an amazing effect, because they don't know what I do, right? As an entrepreneur, as a salesperson, they don't know what I do. And so for me to be able to show them, okay, this is what I do, just on a different scale or a different product, they're finally got it. They're like, oh, I get it, right? Like, I understand, right? I understand what dad does. Because for the longest time, they would just see me leaving for the day, and that would be the end of the conversation. Yeah,
exactly.
Right? Now we have a new connection that we never had before. So that's a big deal for me as a salesperson and as an entrepreneur. So thank you for what you did, man.
Thank you. I mean, that's exactly what I was trying to do, which is, I say the same thing. You know, people say I don't sell you anything. You know, I either help you achieve your goals or solve your problems. That's it. And if your goals aren't big enough and your problems aren't big enough, then why are we having this conversation? Now, does that mean that I give up when you say no? Absolutely not. You know, because I think there is something, but there's huge difference to me between influence and manipulation.
Yes.
Manipulation is what bad sales professionals do. Influence is what great sales professionals do, right? Because I'm not trying to manipulate you. I'm trying to open your eyes a little bit to take down that initial barrier of distrust and ask you some questions that get you to think a little bit and realize, whoa, I didn't even know that that was an option. Or, you know what, you're right. Maybe I should look at this in a different way. I mean, that's what your goal is, right?
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show.
Those movies, Wolf of Wall Street, Boiler Room, you know, Glengarry Glen Ross, it's all about manipulation, and it's everything that's wrong about the profession. I mean, truly wrong about the profession. That's why I think they're great movies. Don't get me wrong. They are super entertaining movies.
Sure.
But they are the worst sales movies I've ever seen in my life. And
yes,
because they depict sales in all the wrong ways. They're just trying to screw people just to get commissions. There's nothing. They're basically selling vaporware, and they're trying to convince people with tactics that trap them in a lot of ways, which is just gross. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm a big believer in the 80-20 rule across the board, right? there are about 20, at least 20% of this profession that are the charlatans, that are the ones that are just trying to make a buck, don't really give a shit. But the others are just trying to figure out what how to make a connection here. And I tell everybody that the number one thing I think you need to have to be successful in sales is a belief in what you do. Because if you genuinely believe that what you do helps people in a lot of ways, like whatever that is, but only for the right people, not everybody, but for the right people, it, you genuinely believe it helps, then sales is the transfer of enthusiasm.
It then becomes your obligation, yeah. Right? Like if you believe in what you're doing and you believe in what you're selling and you believe it's going to change that person or that company's way of doing business, then it's your obligation to call them and tell them about it, because otherwise you don't believe in it. That's what that tells me.
Absolutely. And that's the hard thing for a lot of sales reps to come to realize. And I didn't realize it until I got fired from Staples. Because when I got fired from Staples, it was a real kind of wake-up call for me. Because A, I'd never been fired in my life. B, it was my company. But I just didn't realize that I didn't fit in the corporate structure. So they fired me and it was the best thing that could ever happen to me. But when I was looking for a new job, I was a little bit of a panic because I was an IT sales guy for 7 years. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, is that what I am? Am I an IT sales guy? I'm like, I don't even like computers. I really don't. I can't stand them. You know, servers and routers and all that shit. I could care less about that stuff. And I'm like, so, oh no, what do I do? Right. And my wife was the one who actually helped me out with this. She said, well, let's take a look back at your career. And she's like, let's look at why you were the top rep at pretty much every company you worked at. She says, let's start with DeWalt, right? Why were you the number one rep, like in your region, the number one rep at DeWalt? I'm like, I don't know, because DeWalt power tools are pretty badass. Like they weren't hard for me to sell because I genuinely believe that DeWalt power tools were the best power tools in the industry, right? And then all of a sudden, Xerox. Why was I one of the best reps at Xerox? Well, it wasn't because I cared about copiers. It's just because I genuinely believed that Xerox was the best in the industry at copiers at the time. Thrive Networks, my company, I didn't give a shit about computers, but I knew that the people that I was representing were going to do incredible work for the customer. Right. So when it dawned on me that it didn't matter what I sold, it mattered that I had to believe in what I sold. Mm. And as soon as that happened, that clicked, all of a sudden I started opening up my eyes to everything. And I was just like, oh, wait a minute. Well, what about this? And I could sell that. I could easily see myself selling that because I believe in those things. And you know, it just so happened I had taken this training and I believed in this training and one thing led to another. But that's kind of the, you know, you take any engineer. Let's take, you know, people say, oh, I'm not in sales. Yes, you are. When I say the sales is the transfer of enthusiasm, take any introverted engineer you'll ever, like the most introverted engineer you'll ever come across, and ask them, what was the last thing that they built? What was the last problem they solved from a technical standpoint? And literally watch them light up like a Christmas tree and go, oh yeah, well, you know, I was doing this and I saw this problem and I was able to figure this out. I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning and I da-da-da-da-da and check this out. It's like, oh wow, man, that sounds good. Can I have one? Guess what? You just sold, you know what I mean? Like you just transferred that enthusiasm over to me, right? So that's where I believe that if you get that at its essence, then sales is just, yes, it's a profession, but it's also a mindset.
And I think it comes from intention. I was chatting with Tim David, who is he was previously a magician, and now he teaches all about influence and persuasion. And I think number one, I'm a massive magic nerd. I love magicians.
Nice, yeah.
And I also think that magicians intuitively understand how to persuade because they understand audience and dynamics and all that kind of stuff. But what he said, and he was making the distinction between persuasion, influence, and manipulation. And I said, okay, what is the difference between influence and manipulation? And he said, it's intention. Mm. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, if the intention is for me to help you, that is influence. If the intention is for me to get something out of this and I really don't give a shit about you, that is manipulation.
That's manipulation.
And I was like, I love that. That is a great distinction because if you start from the right place, then you know that you're going in to help solve a problem, then everything that comes from that is going to be of pure intent. And in order for the listeners, in order to think about this maybe differently is if you don't believe that what you're selling right now or what you're doing right now is helping to solve a problem, you've either got to reset your mind frame about, okay, can I think that way? And is it actually helping? Or you got to go and sell something else.
You got to go find another job because you are, I tell people this all. I mean, I know we're in a tough spot right now and people are looking for jobs and you know, you got to be thankful if you have one right now in a lot of ways. But I get a lot of reps asking me for advice like, hey, John, I'm at a company where, you know, I just don't believe in what we're doing here and I'm trying to figure out a way to hit my number and all this other stuff. And I go, my advice for you is I'm sorry. either go to your point, either go talk to your customers, okay? Because if you have customers, seemingly they're getting value out of whatever you do, okay?
Right,
so
exactly.
Go grab customer success and get a couple of clients on the phone and just talk to them and be like, hey, look, help me understand, like, why do you still do business with us? What difference do we make, right? That type of stuff, so that you can start to see it. And then go talk to maybe some of the founders of the business and ask them, hey, why did you start this company? You know, where did this come from, right? And so you can get that, okay, now I see it. But if you can't get that, then you absolutely have to go find something else to do. You have to go find some other company to represent, because if you are continuously selling something you don't believe or you believe is not that good, you are the reason that people look at this profession the wrong way, right? You are.
I love how direct you are, man. This is your East Coast mentality. It's true. Like, look, I mean, it's you're true. An asshole.
It's
sorry
true.
To say.
I hate to say it, but even though if you don't think it's like, you know, I'm not a racist because I have black friends, that's not true. That you could still be a racist. Like, you can still represent sales the wrong way, even if you that's fundamentally right. believe you're not a sleazy sales rep. You can convince yourself every morning that I'm doing this because I need to make a paycheck and support my family. But ultimately, you're reinforcing the stereotype of bad sales professionals if you are out there selling something you genuinely do not believe in.
And I think what you brought up there is very important, because there are some people that they may have believed at some point in time, mm-hmm. but they got stuck in a rut and they didn't really, you know, they got out of passion or out of love with whatever it is they're selling. Go back to your customers, right? Go back mm-hmm. to your customers and understand why. Understand why what you're selling is important to them. And that, look, motivation is important, and you need to be able to understand what the motivation is of the counterparty to buy your stuff in order for you to be motivated. Because otherwise, it's just not going to happen. Yeah. And if you find, for whatever reason, that your attrition rate on customers is really, really bad, now it's time. It's time to go and do something else.
I think that's a good indicator, Mark, there for reps who are struggling with this, is to ask their customer success, what is the attrition rate? What is our churn rate and that type of thing? Because if it is high, if it is more than 10, well, it depends on what you sell. So I don't want to put a percentage on it. But if you don't get more customers or repeat customers after, then there's something wrong there with the business, with the service, with the solution, whatever it is. And that could be, as opposed to you go and do it a ton of research, you could just look at that number and say, that seems a little high compared to the other industry averages. So, and then go on Glassdoor, go on G2 Crowd and read some of the reviews that your clients are saying of you and see what that is. And if you start to get that negative feeling, then yeah, you might want to plan your exit strategy.
G2 Crowd's been such a godsend, man.
Oh, it's huge. Huge.
Dude, I've only discovered it recently. I don't know, for whatever reason, I've been living under a rock.
Oh, man.
But over the last few months, I've been just like, this is wild, man. This is amazing. We have all these reviews.
I did their sales kickoff last year, and I found this out and I almost fell out of my chair when I was, because I was listening to one of the keynotes and then I was going to come up afterwards. And I think it was their CEO that said they are top 200th most trafficked website on the internet.
Whoa.
So think about that for a second. You got Amazon, you got Google, you got Facebook, you got all these massive, huge companies. You have a B2B review website that is top 200th most trafficked in the world. You tell me, you know, that whole stat that by the time somebody comes to us, they're already 60 to 70% of the way through the sales process, corporate executive board, challenger sale, that type of thing. Like, that is a real statistic. Now, that's inbound. I still need to make sure everybody's clear on that's not outbound, right? So that's why we still make calls and stuff. But when a deal comes to you, there is a strong likelihood that they have already done their homework on you. And you better go on G2. And if you're an organization out there right now not paying attention to G2, you should be paying attention to G2 Crowd right now.
Big
and you
time.
Should be on it, and you should have a strategy about it, about how to stay up at the top. And by the way, if you get negative reviews, like, I look at every single review that comes in for us. If it's anything less than a 4 out of 5, I will go on and I will look at why, and I will actually personally comment on each one of those. You know, if you had a bad experience, for instance, Mark, because sometimes, you know, we do trainings, 40, 50, 60 people. You can't please everybody, right? And somebody might come in thinking that it was something and have a bad experience, whatever. Okay. The way you respond to that makes all the difference in the world. So I'll usually jump on, hey, Mark, sorry you had that type of experience, man. Well, the training was supposed to be around these type of things. I'm happy to spend some time with you directly to talk about your specific needs. Give me a call directly if you want, like that type of thing. Because I don't want to just see the reviews. I want to see the negative. Everybody knows how people make decisions on Amazon, right? You look at the reviews, you know, 4 out of 5 stars, whatever it is. And then you open those reviews, you scroll all the way to the bottom to the negative ones, and you see which ones are valid. Oh, well, look, the package came broken. Okay, who gives a shit? Blah, blah, blah. But if there's like real issues there, then you see how the company reacts to it. And then you make your decision based off of that. So I think, you know, those are the type of things that, again, if you're not paying attention to that, you're going to be in some trouble because you're going to be doing a lot of churn and you might not even know why.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think it's so important for people to understand how the market is reacting to whatever it is you're doing. The cool thing about these tools now is you get to see it real time. And it's not anecdotal. It's not like you're just going to be like, oh, I'm not sure. We think it's going this way. Yeah, no, there's the evidence. There's the data, right? Here, look at it. Yep. Just got to make decisions off of it.
Yeah.
So what's next for the whole idea of I want to be in sales when I grow up? Are you going to take this further or is this a one and done thing?
So it was a little bit of a pet project. I haven't spent a lot of time pushing it out there, focusing on it. I still have the site. And, you know, if you go to iwantabeinsaleswhenigrowup.com, you'll see actually the videos of my daughter and all that other stuff. It's, you know, on Amazon, we're not pushing it hard right now. I with sales kickoffs and stuff, we talk about, you know, hey, why don't you grab a few copies of it just to push out there? But it is once I do get to the point where I can stop working as much in the business and work more on the business type of stuff, I'm still the entrepreneur that still does 90% of the work on my end. You know what I mean? I'm still doing all the trainings. I'm still doing all the client work, which I like, but you know, I'm really, really trying. We got a whole new on-demand platform and that's starting to really take off. And so as the on-demand and passive income starts to rise more and more, I can kick back a little bit more on my professional services. And once that happens, I'll probably start doing a lot more and not just around sales. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of all the obscure professions that nobody knows about. So I want to be in procurement when I grow up. You know what I mean? Like I want to be in, I want to be a marketer.
God, no, no one should ever dream of that. No,
right? But think about it, right? Think about it. There's all sorts of professions that nobody knows anything about until they get well into their careers.
I want to be an actuary when I grow up. What?
Right? Like, what even is that? So I think there's an opportunity to partner up with other people in space like yourself, for instance, and you know, and say, hey, let's use this framework as a way to get the word out there. And again, going back to intent, the intent here is to elevate the profession, is to give people another option to consider. Then I'm all in. We'll see. I hope that I can continue on this journey and you know, maybe do some stuff with kids and readings and those type of things as it gets more and more. I still got a bunch of these copies in my garage, so got to get rid of them some way.
But let's talk about the on-demand platform, because I think this is really changing the game, in my opinion.
Yeah,
so your whole idea behind this, correct me if I'm wrong, is to be the Netflix of sales training, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah.
So first of all, why? Mm-hmm. Because you're making a lot of money doing your training right now. Mm-hmm. Why do that? And then how's things going and where can people find more about that?
You know, the whole concept here is, you know, I go back to the 90s rap, you know, moguls, right? Like Dr. Dre and those type of things. Like they didn't become billionaire. He didn't become a billionaire. Well, Beats obviously had a big thing to do with it, but he didn't get to where he was by putting out better tracks. He would go find somebody like Eminem and bring him in and show him how to do it. And then when Eminem spun off, he took a little piece of that, right? So my whole thing is, I know I'm not the smartest cat out there by any stretch of the imagination. And there's other people that are really good in certain areas. And there's always also other up and comers here. And also the way people are learning is changing. So it's no longer sit in a classroom, go through this LMS that is, you know, structured and boring as shit, whatever. There's dynamic. And I also want snippets. I don't want long format. So what we did was we took my content, some of the core programs, right? My Filling the Funnel, Driving to Close, went into studio, cut those up. But then I found, you know, Morgan Ingram and James Buckley, and they have their brands. And so we bring them into the fold, get them to create their content and fold it under this. And so now the more, I'm looking for more of those, right? So Richard Harris and, you know, a few others as we build this. So it's just a collection. It's almost going to be a, yes, Netflix, but almost like masterclass for sales specifically.
Love that.
And also what the hope here is, or my vision at least, I don't know if it's going to come true. I was a little bit early on it a couple of years ago when I thought about it, but I do believe it's coming, is just-in-time learning. I do believe that we are going to be in a position, talk about technology and AI, circling back to that, where you're going to be in Salesforce, you're going to be in whatever, and you're about to make a phone call to Mark Raven, who is the chief procurement officer of XYZ company. And before that call happens, a little video is going to pop up and say, hey, John, before you call Mark, make sure you do X, Y, Z, blah, 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 prep this way. Make sure, you know, remember the questions that you want to ask him or whatever. And so that content snippets, if you will, we've created a format where there's no standard format for how content is created online. So you go on YouTube and you find some dude standing up on stage and, you know, just recording it for 2 hours. Then you find somebody behind a green screen. And then you say, you know, there's all these different ways that content is created. There's not a standard for it. So we've created a standard for it. So now anybody can come in, put their content in this format. It folds up under our Netflix. They can then sell it for themselves for their own brand, but it also fits into the just-in-time learning. So when that pops, we'll be in a position to really put our content anywhere and everywhere. And it's not just about me, right? Like, yes, I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm the umbrella here, but I'm not the umbrella. JB Sales is now the umbrella. I mean, we've actually made a pretty distinct switch from, it used to be Jay Barrows, you know, John Barrows, Jay Barrows LLC. And now we've shifted to JB Sales. Because it's not about me. It's about quality content at the right place at the right time for the right people and allowing them to go in and kind of consume it how they want. So that's kind of the whole concept here. And it's going really well. I mean, we launched it, you know, I don't believe in luck. I believe you make your luck in a lot of ways. And back in December, we went in studio and we recut all of our content and we were planning on launching this in April. And lo and behold, COVID hits and everybody has to go home and content is all of a sudden something everybody's looking for. So holy shit, you just kind of hit the holy grail there. So it's slowly but surely moving upstream and it's putting us in a position to do some really interesting things. So I'm excited to see where that's going to go.
Dude, you're crushing it, man. I'm super stoked. Every time I see you guys online, whether it's you or Morgan or James, whoever it might be online talking about what you're doing, it's really great. And by the way, man, James has a great voice. I was listening to an intro that he did for your show the other day. I was like, Who the fuck is this guy? Oh, Fuck, it's James Buckley.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this guy's voice is incredible.
James is an interesting character in a lot of ways. I mean, him and Morgan are a testament to personal brand building, right? They were both out there doing their thing. And I didn't put a job description out there and said, I'm hiring. I saw what they were doing. And I said, hey, you want to come on board here? And James has got such an interesting story. I mean, you know, talk about putting me on my heels. I actually brought him on my podcast and I said, James, you know, I got to ask you, man, like you're always so happy. Like, why are you so happy, man? Like I try to stay somewhat optimistic, but I'm usually kind of like a pragmatic, you know what I mean? Like I'm in the middle there, right? But you just always seem happy. And it was amazing. He paused for a second and said, you know what, John, I've never said this out loud to anybody. I don't know why I feel comfortable saying it with you, but there was a point in my life where I almost killed myself. I was, you know, strung out on drugs and I was suicidal. And I just woke up one day and said, I don't want to do this. I was living in Florida selling drugs. And I was like, my wife divorced me, my kids left me and all that other stuff. So I packed up my car and just drove to Tennessee and started a new life. And now every day is a blessing. And I'm sitting there like, holy shit. And so for his enthusiasm, his passion for helping, I mean, talk about a passion for helping people.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid has it and it absolutely comes through in his delivery and what he talks about and how he talks about it. So I'm super stoked to have him on board and he's doing some fun stuff now too.
That's awesome, man. Listen, what's the last thing that you want to leave the listeners with today? We've talked about AI. We've talked about, you know, when I want to be in sales, when I grow up, we've talked about your on-demand stuff. What do you want to leave people with?
I think it goes back to the why, right? And right now, I think is a really important time. I think it's an opportune time for a lot of people to take a step back and think about why they do what they do, what gets them up, what gets them excited, what gets them to really assess their lives right now, their careers, and go find something that they can believe in. And if you're not doing that right now, I would really highly recommend it. Go Google, you know, find your why. Go Google how to understand your true values, right? Go Google that stuff and go through that exercise. And put together a game plan and try to get better every day. This is not a situation where anybody is going to come out of this on fire or whatever, but it's just continuous improvement, believing in what you do and trying different things and being agile, right? And doing it for the right reasons in a lot of ways. So if you can go do that, you'll be successful, period. As you know, I'm a huge Gary Vaynerchuk fan and I believe what he says when he says, you know, happiness is the true measure of success. You could be making $40,000 a year and living in a single family home, whatever. But if you are going to work and happy every day and coming home to your kids and that's happy, to me, that's success compared to a multimillionaire who's a miserable prick. So you want to go be that, go find out whatever happiness is for you.
Listen, I love talking to you, Matt. Whenever I have these conversations for the next few hours after that, I'm always like chuckling to myself with the shit that you say.
I mean, unfortunately, I think I've gotten to a point in my career where like I used to care, you know, in your 20s, I always say in your 20s, you're always looking up for permission. So you don't really take the gloves off. In your 30s, you kind of figure out, I think I know what I'm talking about, but you're still holding on to your 20s a little bit because you think you're cool. Once you get into your 40s, you realize I don't give a fuck. And I don't get like, and I'm going to say whatever the hell I want to say. And so I've kind of gotten to that point in my career. I probably got to it a lot earlier than most people because I've been kind of like this. But at the end of the day, people, authenticity and
I love it, man. I love it. I think it's great. I think there needs to be more of it. For the listeners, just so that you know, we'll be linking out to all of these amazing resources in the show notes. John, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Mark. And I'll give one more offer. Actually, last thing here is John M as in Michael Barrows is my handle on Instagram. So like I said, I got a whole bunch of these books in my garage. If anybody has a kid or wants to give them as a gift, just hit me up on Instagram. I'll send it over to you. I'll have my daughter autograph it because she's way cooler than I am, and we'll send it out to you. So if anybody listening here, just hit me up on Instagram and I will be happily send you one of these books as a holiday gift here to try to get some spirits a little bit higher these days, right?
Yeah, I love it, man. Incredible offer. For the listeners, just please go and buy this book, whether it's either you're getting it through the link or whatever it might be. If you hit him on, up on Instagram, get the book. That's the only thing that I can leave you with. It's changed the way that I communicate with my kids because we're connecting at a totally different level now. Again, John, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.